just kind of start it off. You guys got any questions?
I don't know. How do you typically start?
Like this. Welcome, Garrett and Xander, Chiaramonte. That is how you say it, right?
Chiaramonte.
Chiaramonte.
But we've heard a lot of different pronunciations.
Sure. My favorite is Chiaramonte.
Chiaramonte.
Yeah, there's the full-blown Chair is a Mountain.
Chair is a Mountain.
Not really even sure how they're getting that one.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. That's funny. My last name, Whirling, but I get Weirling all the time. Mm. But I feel like you guys have more options. You know,
I got three
options, but y'all probably have like 12.
Yeah, people go any which way they want.
I think the I before the ARA really throws people.
That does
for a
throw
loop.
People off. Yo. Yeah, Chiaramonte, uh-huh. Chiaramonte. Do you ever get anybody not hit the E at the end?
Oh yeah,
all the time.
There's every possible letter you can skip has been skipped before.
Right, right, yeah,
yeah. So.
Well, Garrett and Xander, much easier names to say. The first names of Clear Mountain Entertainment here in Athens, Georgia. Thank you guys for joining me. I'm excited to have y'all on. It's been a long time coming. A lot of back and forth trying to figure out what day we can make this happen. And we're here and we're making it happen. So, absolutely. Yeah, thank you guys for being available tonight. And
thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, dude. What's cool about this, for those who don't know, but usually I interview musicians, and this is a little bit different because you guys actually have your own company, Clear Mountain Entertainment, which I pulled off from the internet here. It says, you described it as a one-stop shop for artist management, media services, band booking, and event production. Got that from the UGA Red and Black. You guys manage bands like Wim Tapley, Red Mile Road. Is there anyone else that you guys manage?
So we worked with Supper Club for a while there.
Supper Club.
We ended up parting ways. They're as far as I know, going to go inactive relatively soon following the summer, but it's a shame. I love their music.
Gotcha, yeah.
But yeah, no, they're great guys.
Nice.
Yeah, we had a good run there.
And you guys also, you started this band, or not band, I'm so used to saying that. You started this company on a 42-day road trip. Is that how it went down?
Yeah.
What's the story behind that?
Yeah, so basically we just, decided might as well go, see everything we can. We had a kind of an open summer in between some internships and things like that. And so we kind of just set out, got a little rooftop tent going, and just, went out 42 days, hit a lot of like nature, national parks and things like that. And just kind of, just were able to sit and talk and listen to podcasts like this and just kind of dream about the next stage. And it was great because we got to see a lot of stuff I don't think we would have ever seen otherwise.
Dude, 42 days is so long.
Right. A lot of time in the car to really flesh out a business plan. That's
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe even a little too in depth where it's like you get a little bogged down in the details. But now we're kind of patting ourselves on the back for that because you never know what's going to happen when you're running your own, thing. And it's having that, backup plans after backup plan is always nice.
And it definitely like served as an ideation stage too, which is fun. Just throw stuff out and see where it sticks. And, when we come back, we knew kind of the timeline of the whole trip. Like we knew that when we come back, we can take action on these things, but it was fun to just throw things out and see what sticks and kind of identifying after our time in Athens, kind of seeing like where we wanted to head with that.
Yeah. So when you guys started this idea or like when it first came to y'all, what was the original seed of the idea and how would you compare it to what it is now? Is it pretty close to how you imagined or has it kind of changed a lot or a little bit of both?
It's evolved quite a bit. Originally it started as a lot media and personal management was almost kind of secondary. I'll be blunt, I had little to no experience when I first started working with Red Mile Road. Shout out those guys, Jay Cadet, Spencer Shaw, Jack Wilson, Ben Maddox, man, those are some great friends. But, didn't really have much experience. Read the Donald Passman book, which I feel like is a rite of passage for a lot
of
people.
What book is that?
Donald Passman, it's The Guide to the Music Business.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I might be botching that title, but yeah.
Something along
those
lines.
It's kind of an all-encompassing, how do I approach the music industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, a lot of YouTube videos, whatever, and then music business program is really where I started to dive into it. But starting with Red Mile Road was really how I kind of got into the music scene. first, again, like, I was kind of a fish out of water, really just trying to figure out the best way to go about this and how to run it through the business and have it be sustainable and truly provide value. And, you know, for Xander, it was definitely a lot tangible. Even since, you know, early on in high school, he was shooting for different bands and DJs, you know, places like the 930 Club and, you know, some of those famous venues that we just know and love now that we're originally from D.C. So that's kind of kind of got into the entertainment industry in a sense. And you can touch on that if you liked it. But
yeah, I mean, I think really like the core thing that's been there since the beginning has been the idea of that one-stop shop that you said, just basically like, you know, we notice in Athens that there's all this talent in various, you know, portions of the, you know, the industry. So you can have, you know, the graphic designers over there, obviously the bands, the bars, the, you know, and people just seem like they, you know, couldn't connect as efficiently as like, you know, maybe, you know, Nashville might have it where there's more agents, you know, around and people pulling strings and connecting people. And I think like, you know, just at the level that a lot of Athens musicians are at, it's like very, very easy to provide value and connect people to people that they might not know. And so like that kind of connection point and just being, you know, the one-stop shop for people to find who they're looking for, I think has like really been the reason for our growth into different areas, because it's like, oh, okay, we realize that, you know, people don't have access to this. Like we should make that more accessible and like, you know, have that, you know, be like something that's offered on a menu, you know, like,
right,
you know, like a quick, you know, graphic for a flyer.
Yeah. So it seems like maybe you guys started out with like a more rigid, or I don't want to say defined, but, you know, I guess more of a tunnel vision.
Absolutely.
Perspective. And now that you've met more people and, you know, networking and all that, now you're able to offer more. So like you said, the menu is bigger.
Absolutely.
How have you been able to do that and yet still maintain focus on a good goal for the artists at the end of the day?
Absolutely. Yeah. So kind of what Xander was saying, you know, about connecting people and connecting the dots between, you know, musicians, photographers, editors, graphic designers, bars, venues, et cetera. That's where it really started to, you know, reveal what the business could be. If we're touching on every aspect of the artist's growth and development, then suddenly we truly do become a one-stop shop. You know, even early on, we wanted to be a one-stop shop, but we were like, all right, how do we even really get there? And so as we met more people and kind of dived into the music scene and the creative, you know, scene here and media, you know.
And bringing people on. That's a big thing. Allowed us to cover our bases. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. We now have three paid people with us, and they've just been awesome. We couldn't have expanded without them. So if you guys are listening, thank you. We couldn't do it without you.
Shout out.
But yeah, I mean, once we, you know, started meeting all these friends, and we really realized that value could come from other people, and that's fine. This has always been a collaborative project for us, in a sense, where we want to involve as many creatives as we can, because the net result is so much bigger than what we can create alone. And suddenly everybody wins, and we can still be completely viable by bringing in different people with different talents. And it's all good for the artist. If you suddenly have connections to everybody that can help them grow, I don't know. I mean, to me, that seems like one of the end goals, but, you know, obviously we still have a long ways to go, but we like to think that, you know, we have some good people in our corner and, in our artist corner. And, it's been really exciting. But you know, one big thing that's really kind of changed my mind is the idea of networking, right? At first I was like, okay, you know, networking is obviously essential. But I looked at it at first as like, okay, I just need to like accumulate contacts or whatever. But it's just so much more than that. And that's really kind of a hollow way to think about it. And maybe it's just me, but I think maybe some people think that way as well. And I'm more and more thinking that networking is truly just building relationships. And in general in life, I think that's one of the most important things you can do, and that's how you're truly going to be fulfilled, I would say. The networking aspect is really just a byproduct of creating relationships, creating friendships, and enjoying that part of life. And when you can do that, suddenly people, you know, gravitate towards you and whatever your projects are. And if we can help them along the way too, then all the better. But to me, that's really how this company has evolved, is the awesome and talented people we've worked with. We really can't take much credit for its growth. It's really been just such an amazing experience to see the support that this community has you know, granted us. It's amazing.
That's awesome. I think you really hit the nail on the head about networking, because that word over the years has, to me, and I think a lot of people, garnered this kind of gross, slimy feeling of like just meeting people for the sake of saying you know somebody,
just
which
hunting
you could
for
just
context.
Fucking lie about it. If you yeah. wanted to.
And just like LinkedIn culture vibe,
right?
Just
you're
messaging
like,
people.
I got over 500
like
connections.
And
you're like, could you call all of them up right now?
Right.
And
absolutely
like
not.
Ask them for something? Or
and you if know, some employer was, you know, looking into you and they started looking through
right.
your followers and asked them about you, how many of them actually know you?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, that's,
yeah,
that's
making those genuine
matters.
I mean, how many times have I gone to a show and I run into you, and you know, now like we've hung out like five or six random times,
right.
and it's like, that is, at the end of the day, you know, you get to know somebody, and that's more of a genuine connection than just saying like, oh yeah, like network, we follow each other on Instagram, which I mean, you know, you got to do that too, but
does that really mean
deeper.
Anything?
Right. Yeah, it goes
and
deeper.
That's one of the big shout outs to Athens, though. It's like the way that people mm-hmm. can, you know, network at these shows and be around and always, you know that you'll find people that you can meet that'll be interested in the same things. Clearly music is the central locus, but you know, there's so many aspects of the music industry in Athens that are just totally designed to foster that. You know, people are so supportive.
Absolutely.
Like people are so willing to, you know, go to each other's shows just to be there and, you know, enjoy the artists, but also just, you know, meet people and, you know, not hold any.
It's very centralized,
right?
Like that's why I moved here. Atlanta, as great of a music city as it is, it's huge. It's hard to know where to start, where I feel like in Athens,
you can
go to the 40 watt, you're going to see the same, not like the same people over and over, but like nowadays I pretty much just go to shows alone because I know that when I get there, I will know somebody there.
And that is special. Like that does not exist many places. Like
right.
I think that's just an absolutely beautiful part about Athens. It's so cool.
It's awesome. Let me make sure that the camera is rolling. It should be, but I just want to double check here.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
I've had a couple nightmare scenarios.
Just wasn't going.
Yeah, no.
It's like the last, you know, when you go up to turn it off and then it starts recording and you're like, oh no.
Yeah,
dude.
No, trust me. I know that feeling. I'm taking, you know, a crazy video and then all of a sudden I realized I had clicked it before that and was taking some, you know, blurry photo of me setting up before I like,
yeah, it's like
you know,
the
got
worst
the money
angle
shot.
Of yourself.
So brutal.
Yeah.
The selfie angle pops
it's
up and you're
awful,
like,
awful, dude. Yeah. The, like quadruple chin. But okay. So I wanted to ask you guys, let's say an artist comes to you with not much experience, you know, maybe some demos, maybe one or two songs that are on Spotify, played a couple open mics, maybe like one show that feels like a real show, like a venue, but they want to grow. What kind of advice would you give them? What kind of questions would you ask from them?
So let's put this up by sides of our company because we kind of both do different.
Oh, I did want to ask about that too. Yeah, so this is
and
a great way
this,
to.
Yeah, this would be like illuminating in that way. You want to go first?
Sure, yeah. So, again, it's really going to depend on the artist and what their personal goals are. And that's how I would kind of tailor the advice to start with. And then if we ended up, you know, working together in a more, you know, long-term situation, then that relationship will also evolve. But, sure, maybe they're not quite developed yet or they're just getting into it. That was kind of where we wanted to focus. We wanted somebody to be taking care of the underdogs and the diamonds in the rough that are getting, not the attention that they deserve, because there's so many uber talented bands in Athens that, you know, just either don't have the means to promote themselves and put themselves in a place where they can be seen in a big way, or maybe they just don't know how to approach that.
So in a lot of ways, like, that turns into kind of a consulting role where, you know, we're kind of assessing where they're at. That's kind of how we start with, you know, most of the artists. And
I just try to understand as much of their situation as I possibly can. And then we kind of tailor a plan from there. And it's almost never the same. Because it's really going to depend on every facet of their career and themselves as people. And that's a part I really want to emphasize too, is the kind of people that we want to work with are people that are driven and care about, you know, cultivating a collaborative culture here in Athens as well. If you're out for yourself, if you're on some kind of ego trip, it's not necessarily the kind of people we would work with. I mean, if you're in it for the art and you're in it for the love of creation in general, then that inspires us too. And we're so much more inclined to, you know, really dive into what their project is and what their vision is. And for me personally, like, when I work with somebody, I have to fully dive into their world and to dive into, you know, what, you know, drives them and what makes them tick. And in that way, I can truly provide the value that they need. Otherwise, it's some boilerplate release plan that means nothing to them or really anybody else. If it doesn't mean anything to you, then how can it really mean anything to, you know, whatever kind of demographic you're trying to target? So, you know, understanding them is a big part of those kind of initial meetings we'll have, and what direction they want to go in. Are they going to be, you know, touring less and releasing a lot, or, you know, touring a lot and releasing less frequently? What's the general roadmap? And then, you know, then we start thinking about the media and the social media, which is so crucial at this point. And that's where Xander really takes over.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, the big thing is, you know, short form video, as you know. Like, it's just, that's where it's all at.
The old TikTok,
yeah, the old Instagram reels. You know, that's always where I start, in terms of just, like, the most highly leveraged specific type of media that we can get started on for an artist, like, at that kind of stage, like, who, you know, is just starting out, has something to take a video of, you know, or make some kind of content of like a show or something like that, but kind of just starting out, and kind of how we can add some kind of spark of their character into that is always huge. Cause it's like, what's going to separate you when you're kind of just sitting there on, like, you know, a small bar stage, like, what can we add to this, kind of spice it up, like, and add their flair. So definitely that kind of content. And then, you know, flyers, we do a lot of flyers, just to get, like, a, you know, a nice visual for someone to kind of promote their shows, because a lot of people have trouble just, like, gathering that for a low price. And so, like, we like to definitely, like, help people out at those lower tiers for those, like, kind of important smaller things, like the, you know, a few TikToks for promotion, and, you know, a few like a flyer for, you know, the first three or four shows coming up, like, and just keep those prices low so that they can kind of get a foothold, you know, and then allow that to kind of, you know, be the place where they can then, you know, get a bigger gig or something, and Garrett's side will very much aid in that. And, you know, we go from there. And so just, you know, seeing what works and starting at those small thresholds that will do, you know, some actual change for them that they can see, I think is the way to go with the media. Because you can get carried away and do a music video off the rip, and then you're like, wait, why did I do this? Like, you know, like, there's no reason for either of us to be having this right now. Like, you know, big project on our end, and, like, you know, they're not necessarily, like, ready to do that. You know, they might not have the song ready or something like that. So it's like, you know, let's just stick to where you are and what you're doing and get good high leverage content for that.
Gotcha. So it sounds like it's obviously very tailored to the artist that comes up to you. Is there something about an artist that would really intrigue you and say, like, oh, like, we have to work with this person? And then on the opposite end, other than, like you said, being maybe somebody who feels like they're in it for the wrong reasons or is not a team player, like, what's something that might give you a red flag about, like, I don't think this person is ready to do this, or maybe they're not going to take it seriously or anything like that.
So like personally, like I thrive off of variability, you know, just like being working with people who have different stuff going on. So it's not formulaic, you know, being forced to like try new things because of, you know, the way the artist might want it, but also like, you know, how we perceive the artist and build that relationship together. Like getting something new out of that is always like really a crucial, like, reason for me to choose a certain type of work, you know, branch out into something new, see if I can do it and do it at the level of something I've done, you know, and then continue building that and, you know, making sure that I have, you know, some bases covered for, you know, people who want to try some stuff that I've done before, or, you know, go in a new direction.
Would you summarize that as kind of having like a growth mindset in summary?
That's the big thing. Like, it's always just about like, you know, even if it's the same thing, even if I'm doing, you know, my 30th TikTok this month, it's like, I want to make sure that like, I'm trying something new in each one, even whether that's editing or production, or, you know, there's something that like is a little bit different that excites me in the project. And, you know, usually that's what ends up exciting the artist, because that's something that they came up with that I implemented and executed, or, you know, the other way around. And that's always the thing that ends up being, you know, the weird viral content, or the, you know, part that they both end up that they love, or they, you know, run with early in their career for kind of a brand identity thing where they're like, you know, I want to keep that in my style, my repertoire, you know? So like, I kind of love like just trying that out. And, you know, we're kind of at the stage where we can do that. Like, the startup stage is so fun for that reason, because we can just kind of like go do try things, and, you know, it's risky, but that's kind of the point of the stage of a startup. Like, where
it's a calculated risk. And that's something that's really driven this business forward, is, you know, obviously we're putting a lot of thought into the risk we take, but the risk is still there inherently. And so, you know, for that purpose, it's definitely not for everybody. You know, when we started this company, we both dropped our entire life savings into it, and we're like, hope it works out. And so the, we're both sweating.
We're
a
in
bit.
It now.
Yeah.
And the events really show you the risk.
True.
Because they
the
make
events,
you, they,
like the Classic City Jam.
Yep.
Which is happening again.
Yep.
The end of August.
Oh yeah.
I definitely want to talk about that. We can finish up our conversation here, though, first about, you know, you said variability is something that you really like to see in an artist.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Any other really positive traits?
That kind of leads me to, you know, persistence. If you're not willing to just keep going
and just show up for yourself,
you probably shouldn't really even start to begin with. Because breaking into the music industry is a very difficult task. Very difficult. You can be extremely talented, but if you're not willing to put in the work and just keep going, even if there's setbacks or downright failures, you just got to keep going and know that that was a learning experience.
Yep.
That's it. Don't look at it as a failure. You're stronger for it, and now you know not what not to do.
Right.
Period. Hard stop. And to me, like, if you're resilient and you have drive and just persistence to get through whatever it might be, we'll be a good fit.
Nice.
Absolutely. Because, you know, if there's no input from the artist and there's no work on the artist's end to create and to focus on the music, then there's nothing to manage, you know? It's like there has to be some, you know, want for growth and want for, you know, new ideas and collaborations, and I want to tour in these places, and we turn around and we try to make it happen for them. But if there's no, you know, strong desire to do this, it's very hard to coax it out of somebody.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's already like hard. If you're not in it, you're just making it harder for yourself.
Because persistence is really just, you know, it ends up equaling action, and action ends up equaling movement and like some kind of growth or some kind of direction. And like, that's always just the core of what, like, you know, when we start getting into the weeds on planning things and stuff, it's like, okay, what are we doing right now? What are we doing today? What are we doing like this week? Like, how are we preparing for this event next rather than this event that we could do in the future? And, you know, like, I think kind of balancing that is interesting. And I think that's kind of a fun part about me and Garrett's relationship, is I like to get lofty and dreamy sometimes and come up with these, you know, grand ideas, and Garrett will come in and systemize them and kind of, you know, and then we switch roles. But, you know, it's just fun that we've had a relationship outside of this business in that way. 'Cause it's like, we've had, you know, many different scenarios where we're just enjoying something. Like we went to Bonnaroo recently and it's like, oh, okay, like we switch in and out of the like brother and the, you know, business partners mode where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, this is cool. Like, and then, you know, we might talk about it in the way that we like it or reminds us from something from, you know, childhood, or it's like, let's implement that. Like, that's cool as hell. Like, let's like bring that into the business world. Like, so it's just, I love that aspect of our relationship, man. It's like, it's great.
I honestly think that's one of the things that's allowed us to survive for now almost 2 years is, that back and forth between you and I. You create these, you know, lofty visions that just could be absolutely amazing. And sometimes I just have to try to break it up and bring it into reality in a sense. Oftentimes, sometimes the other way around. For
bit
sure.
of a left brain, right brain.
Truly. Situation. Definitely. Kind of make, you know.
And coming to
two
that.
Halves of a whole.
Coming to that kind of central compromise mm-hmm. realm is just like so fun to get there. You know, right. It's like, okay, that's a, you know, that would make this way more expensive and, you know, not feasible, but this we could do, you know, it's, so it's like right, a game right. of, you know, compromising almost with ourselves because we have very similar tastes too. Like, right. I can't tell you how many times I've like got a piece, like a thing of clothing, and this dude's like already got it, like from some like separate thing, and I like had no idea, and I'm like, damn, how'd you? I didn't know you had that shirt.
You could just wear it all the time. Yeah. You could always be matching. Maybe that could be like the shtick.
Maybe that's our thing.
The Kiramonte shtick.
Shout out Kempt. We run into that problem all the time.
Kempt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got one more question before we get to Classic City Jam, sure. And it might even involve that, but. Of all the successes that you would say in your mind that you guys have had as a company, and all the, you know, quote unquote failures, setbacks, with successes, what did they all have in common? What was the through line? And then same thing for maybe the setbacks. What was the through line?
People. The people met, the friendships created. I mean, sure, like, maybe the first Classic City Jam was a financial success, or we noticed that people just really enjoyed the experience that we were able to cultivate, you know, so be it. That's great. That's a success. But again, it's those smiling faces in the crowd when I look back from, you know, behind the stage and I'm like, damn, like we're bringing some joy to this person. That's what matters a lot to me. And that, to me, that's kind of the true success. When the artist comes back from a sold-out show and we're in the green room and, you know, you can just feel the joy radiating from the band. To me, that's the reward. It's unbelievable.
So sick, yeah.
Unbelievable.
And there's that side of the people, and then there's also just the side of, like, the importance of, like, the cold walk-up or the cold email. Like, that to me has been the biggest change in probably the last year and a half for like in general. Cause like, I think a lot of people wait for people to come across your path, mm-hmm. Until you can kind of, you know, have them join your network and link with them on right, LinkedIn. Right. But like more so like, you know, people are kind of passive in that way where they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like I know this guy is in Athens over there doing that cool thing. Like that's cool. And just, they just admire it for a while. But like at a certain point, it's like, you know, go introduce yourself to that person. Like right. It's so, people are so like willing to talk to you for the most part, like especially
if you're in
for Athens.
The right reasons.
Yeah. Right. And like, you can just tell, like, so I think that's been the biggest change. Like even, you know, at the UJ, like, innovation hub and things like that, they have these speakers all the time, and just like going to them and talking to the people after, like, you just pick up these like little tricks of the trade and things from things like that are not even in our realm really. It's like some finance guy, mm-hmm. you know, or some guy that started an app at the thing, and I'm like, you know, go talk to him after and see what he's, you know, his path was. But I mean, honestly, like that's the biggest difference, is like making sure that like no one's out of your realm. Like you can just at least try and send an email or two and follow up is big too.
Follow up is huge.
Yeah.
Dude, so many times people don't respond to that first email, but that second one, they hit back for whatever reason. I've done it where I got the second email. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I never replied to the first one. And it's nothing personal. It's not personal. Yeah, that's a huge thing learned in, you know, doing this, is so much is not personal.
So big.
And I mean, people get really offended, and it's like, you know, there's been moments where I'll miss an email and I'll look back a week later. I'm like, ooh, That was 2 weeks ago. I need to get back to that
yeah. person. Dude, with you, like this right, night when right, we were setting right, this right. up, like you hit me up like a week prior and then you even questioned the text and I was like, I'll get back to him. And I was like, oh shit, I never right. did.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to on the other side of it when you don't know what happened to just be like, that guy sucks, dude. He doesn't get back to me. But it's right. like we all have those moments where we just forget and shit right. like that happens.
Yeah, Mark is unread is my best friend. I love the little hold it down and hit it. Mark is unread. Come back to it later when I have yeah. a moment to think about what I'm thinking about, what we're talking about here.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, like creating a network of true relationships has been a true reward. You know, some of these people we work with are not only, you know, business relationships, but true friendships. And that's where it really starts to feel cohesive. And there's real synergy in that. When you know somebody as a friend and you know they have this unbelievable skill and they're just doing cool things and they're also taking action. Taking action. To me, that is the most important thing. We try to surround ourselves with people that are actively doing something they love, whatever it might be. If you're just getting after it, no matter what your age is, no matter what your level of experience, if you're just trying it and failing and trying again and getting better, I love that. To me, that's really everything. Again, like I didn't know anything when I was starting this. I had to try to study it and learn it and you know, now I feel that I know enough to really provide value, but beginning I didn't. And it was trial and error, and it was an iterative experimental process. But now we're getting to a point where we're starting to hone in, and that part feels really good.
And not to go David Goggins mode on it, but I like, honestly, like just completely ridding the word, like, you know, failure and having everything just be a trial. And like, you know, you can read the success however you want, but like, everything is just a trial, you know, it's like, I did that, you know, and usually most things, like you got to go like so many different, you got to have so many different trials in order to get anywhere close to like what you would think would be good.
Right.
So it's just like the first, you know, 20 times you do anything, it's like, why would you ever call it like a failure? Or why would you ever call it like, you know, something you're not good at? Like,
yeah,
it's just so, it's so funny to me how fast people write off like entire like segments of things they could do. Like my favorite is drawing. Like everyone like thinks they're bad at drawing, but it's like, have you, you know, tried it like, you know, 15 times, you know, like right, to try right, to draw, right. try and draw the same like mountainscape with a little barn or whatever, like 15 times, like promise it'll get better. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And it just goes to show it's like so much that way. And like, especially anything creative, like, cause you just, you hone the skills around it and then the creativity just gets more like clear, like what you want it to be just becomes more clear because of your skill has been, you know, honed around it. It's like a wrapper. And so like I just love that aspect of creativity and creative business. Like it's just so fun because you can just try stuff out and like see how it goes.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
dude, it's fun. I teach music to kids and it is funny because, you know, some kid will pick up a guitar for the first time and they're like, I'm bad at this, I can't play this chord. I'm like, you've tried it 3 times. You know, literally. It's like, I promise you, yeah, it might hurt right now, but you're not used to it. Like, it's just funny to see kids, especially, but we all do it, you know, try something new and immediately have a distaste for it because they weren't as good as they thought they would be from the jump. And like, when is that ever the case? It's so rare that the first time you do something, you're really good. And you know, when that does happen, it's like a card game, you know, some shit that right. doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know? When we started, just got lucky.
Yeah. Right. When we started this business, I'll be honest, I was downright afraid. I was afraid of how people might see it, how people might see me. There was a lot of financial risk involved.
A lot of age factor in there, kind of like, are we, you know, how are we going to be taken seriously?
Right. And I was like, you know, I kind of came to a revelation and I realized that why fear failure when you have so much time in your life to get it right and to do exactly what you want to do, but you got to go do it. Do it now.
That's the real failure.
Go do it now.
Not doing it.
Not doing it is the real failure. It is so true.
Like persistence and accountability can overcome like any of the things we just listed. Like, oh, you're young. Doesn't matter if you're persistent and you're accountable. Like, doesn't matter, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter if you're persistent and accountable. Like, if, you know, if you do something wrong and you say, yeah, I did that wrong, like, when I do it again, you know, in half the time I did it the first time, it's going to be way better. You know, it's like both of those things together just become such a weapon. Like, I just, like, people, like, really, you know, get held up in that, in the kind of...
They're ruminating about whatever it is, and they're like, oh, I want to do this so bad, and, like, you know, I guess I could do it this way, or, you know, whatever, and they're just thinking about it, and it's just like, nobody has it figured out. Some of the, you know, most successful people in the world started at the same stage, where, like, you know, Zuckerberg's like, I guess I gotta figure out how to code, because I think this is cool and interesting. Mm-hmm. Everybody started the Everybody same, had square to. One.
Yeah.
You just got to get over that hurdle of, like, you know, can I do this? The answer is yes, with a lot of time and effort and energy.
Mm-hmm. Patience. And
a lot of people just don't want to do that or don't know how to even approach that. And I think one of the biggest limiting factors is just fear.
Yeah, there's like a, there's a real fear in knowing that if you try something and you fail, quote unquote fail, then...
That's the end of the world.
Then it's the end of the world, or that's harder for people to swallow than never trying it, because then they never technically failed because they never did it. But it's like, how many times do you hear about, like, people on the deathbed, they, the things they regret are the things they didn't do, not the things they did do.
Always. You know? Every time.
And it's like, you might try something and you realize that maybe it's not for you, but
right.
You still try.
You don't have to stick with it if you don't like it.
And it's like, I think people think that trying something and failing, and, you know, maybe they're worried about judgment from other people. It's like, you still did something that maybe not many people have even tried to do.
Exactly.
Sure, you might not be good at it yet, but keep trying. You'll probably get there. Enough practice, you'll figure it out.
Exactly.
It's such a limiting thought process, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we touch back on the growth mindset, is like, you have to want to, you know, take that first step. And those steps really never end either. If you want to grow as an artist,
yeah, that's true.
You know, you got to keep jumping those hurdles. And to me, that's some of the fun of life now, I've realized, is like, there's fear in every event I throw, in every new thing I try to start with this business, every new segment. And I've now kind of turned that fear and anxiety into, this is exciting. Mm. And odds are I may fail. But I might not, and even if I do, I'm going to do it again until I get it right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that failure you would rather have earlier than later. Like, I just played a new song in front of new people for the first time ever, and it didn't go as well as I had hoped, and I was really bummed. And then I realized I just needed to move the capo up 2 frets. And I was like, oh, I can sing this much better now. It feels so much better. And it's like, if I didn't do that, I would have recorded it in the wrong key. And then I would have had to have done that every time, right? So it's like, I'm glad I failed earlier with that. And, you know, I keep saying fail, but there's imaginary quotations around that. I have a question for you, too. Sure.
I remember one of our first conversations. You're telling me you're out in L.A. and you're doing some acting. How was that transition to music? Was music kind of always in your life? And then follow up, how did you get over that hurdle of that transition and just jumping into the scene?
Mm.
And then even in Athens, like,
yeah,
what was that process like for you?
Garrett's gone Rogan.
Dude, let's go. Let's do a 4-hour podcast. Break up the smelling salts.
The
white
rhino. Yeah. DMT coming out now.
Let's do it. Yeah, yeah. Jamie, pull that up. just kidding.
We're going to start wearing like the ghillie suits.
Yeah, and,
like,
yeah, exactly. So, good question. I've been acting longer than I've been doing music. I started when I was like, I say I really started at 13, but in reality it was more like 10. But 13 is when I started doing more like film, TV. I started pivoting towards that because I did theater at first. And then really started taking it seriously around 15. And then by the time I graduated high school, it made sense, where I felt like I had built up enough of a resume. I had people in LA that, you know, said they would rep me if I was there. So it felt like, oh, okay, I've nailed down some genuine, real, important things to have before making this big leap. And music really came into my life at kind of in a serious level, maybe like senior year of high school. I was in a couple bands in high school. And my first one where we did original music was when I was like, whoa, this is really fun. Like, we're actually recording tunes. We're playing Smith's Old Bar and I'm like 17 years old. Like, this is cool as hell.
Sorry to interrupt you, but how does it feel to play in bars like that when you're not old enough? Because I remember I would go to 9:30 club. I was 15. My dad drove me to the 9:30 club to take pictures of like Ganja White Knight, and actually Subtronics was opening back then. They were pretty big. And I just remember like being in there and literally feeling like, what in the world? Like, I have this big camera backpack on. I'm like such a little youngin', and like, you know, you looking around, it's like all these like ravers and stuff, and I've never seen people like this before, really. Like, you know, like, yeah. I hadn't been 15, haven't been to like, you know, big like EDM concert. I'm like, damn. So like, did you feel that, or did you feel like, you know, were you nervous as hell, or like?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, it was weird, like there being like free beer in the back, and I'd like never drank before. You
know? I was like,
we get this, and they were like, well, you don't, but you do, but you don't.
You get to look, be around weirdly close to it.
It was weird, like opening for like dudes that were like 35, you know, or something. But it was weird. I only did that maybe a couple times, and then I was 18 and I could go to shows and stuff. LA was mainly all acting. I did music there, but it wasn't a whole lot of live performance, and it was recording stuff, and it was usually by myself. I met these guys called The Fund, and they are producers, so then they started producing a couple tracks with me. But nothing got too serious, because there wasn't a really strong community. I found, at least I didn't find one, out there. It was hard
to break in there.
Yeah, for sure. And the people who I was close friends with who were really into music weren't really doing the same kind of thing. So it was hard to like collaborate with them, because it ended up never really like being something either one of us was that stoked on. It happened one time, my very first song, and it was with my close friend, and you know, it's a little more R&B, which is hilarious because I don't do anything like that, but he is that's his stuff, you know. Athens was a much more like just much more my speed. Everybody's on the same kind of train. Not that there's only one kind of sound here, but I found a lot more people who liked the same kind of stuff. Everybody was super supportive. You know, I recorded with Patrick Doherty at Racket Recording and started gradually meeting people, met Tommy, now we live together. So I guess the way acting has influenced music really is it's less so about the actual creative parts of it and more about maybe how I think about it in a business sense. Because in acting, it's been a lot of, my dad always told me, if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
So true.
That has to this day been maybe like I was thinking about it. It might be the most important piece of advice he's ever given me, because that changed my perspective on like the worst you're going to get is a no if you ask for something from somebody, or a no response. And then who cares? Like, how much does that really affect you? Like,
not at all.
You're not worse off.
Yeah. No, it's literally net zero. And it could have been, you know, the biggest, you know, connection you could have ever had.
Exactly.
And odds are you learn something from it too.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, maybe I had like 20 typos in this, you know, booking email or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, all right, I'm starting to realize what might have gone wrong here. But, you know, it's like, again, it goes back to that taking that first actionable step. And it's like, you know, you just got to go take the leap of faith. Otherwise, you're really going nowhere.
You're always just going to wish you did.
Always going to wish you did.
But the touchback on the film real quick. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to hit you up this semester. I'm taking two film classes, cinematography and directing. So
okay.
Always looking for actors.
There's a cinematography class? That's cool.
Yeah. Keith Sweet. Wilson. He actually just won a pretty solid award. I saw his film at Cine. He did a short film. I think it's called, I didn't see you there. But yeah, he's the man. So I'm excited to take that class. Cool. Yeah, it should be cool.
Well, hey, hit me up.
Yeah, will do.
Well, let's talk about the Classic City Jam before we go to the last five. Classic City Jam, it's your second annual music festival,
second
right?
Annual.
The second one.
Yep.
All right. What did you learn from the first one that you're implementing into this one?
So weirdly enough, the first one kind of like had no real big issues, which was downright miracle level event because you know, obviously,
and also a testament to Garrett's extreme organizational skills. Like,
nice.
Man's had it locked down. Like,
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But you know, I would say the biggest thing was being prepared for the unexpected and taking a deep breath. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
You got to just not like over fixate and oh, this isn't quite, you know, perfect or whatever. It's like, just it's organized chaos and you have to be okay with that. And you know, of course, systemize and organize as much as you can and control the variables that you can control and leave the rest up to God or whatever you believe in. And I think that goes for most of anything people do in general in life.
Mm-hmm.
Control the stuff you can control and leave the rest up to fate, God, who knows.
And it kind of goes back to like we were talking about like media and like adding that little spark of something, you know, and like sometimes the disorganized thing or the thing that you think didn't go well ends up being people's favorite thing. Like I just think about like sometimes at like, you know, parties around Athens and stuff, like oftentimes people's favorite parties and, you know, things that they thought were fun were like the ones that got kind of ruckus, like that just kind of got out of hand in like a good way, but like teetered that line where no one got hurt. Everything was, you know, went smoothly. Like you can say that, like, don't come for us, Athens PD and fire marshals and stuff. But like really just like that teetering that line of feeling like, oh, this is cool. This is memorable. Like something happened here and I'm glad I was here. You know, like
yeah,
that feeling at the events is so cool when you can like, you know, show something to Athens that they haven't seen before and it'll kind of like create a little spark in the crowd and make people feel like, oh, okay. Like I'm glad I was here because this probably won't happen again for a while, you know, or like this probably like I haven't seen this in Athens or like. So usually like those things that you might think like, you know, weren't the way that you wanted them, like, you know, the graphics were not what we would have gone for or something like that, or not saying that was anything that was, you know, real, but you know, just as a perfect example.
As an example,
like,
yeah.
It's like those things end up being what, you know, allow you to see what you like and what you don't like too. So it just works out
right.
To kind of find your way back into, you know, Athens and be kind of customer centric in that way, like making sure people are getting what they want, you know.
Where I really learned about event production was this rave we threw in April.
Hmm.
It was my class music business microcosm project, right? Where you have to go do something in the industry. And, you know, I went and spoke to David Barbie. You know, you had to go check in with him.
Go listen to his episode. It just came out today.
Oh, absolutely.
That's good. I need to listen to that too.
Shout out to David Barbie.
Yeah, he rocks, dude. It was awesome having him on.
He's been an absolute mentor in my life. And, you know, really gotta, Barbie, if you're listening, thank you for everything. But, you know, I go into his office and I'm like, right, so can I like throw another rock show festival or something? And he's like, no, you gotta do something new. And I'm like, I was like half joking. I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna throw a rave. And he's like, yeah, you are. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm throwing a rave.
I guess I'm doing this now.
And I'm like, you know, I don't know much about EDM, to be honest with you. It's not something I listen to super regularly. And like, you know, I've been to a couple like rave shows, you know, whatever, but
shout out Odessa, most insane performance we've ever seen.
We were back at Bonner.
Yeah. Oh really?
Yeah. Like actually just like ridiculous. Like the craftsmanship that goes in and the like, sorry to derail you, but the cohesion of their set is just so cool. Like they got everything like dialed in and like all the lights and like orchestration, like it's just unbelievable.
I've never really been to like a real rave. So I have no idea like what's behind that curtain.
It can truly be unbelievable and an extremely memorable experience.
And like showmanship that you can do, like the lights and the fog,
right.
And the, like
heavy stage production, which is different than, because you can do the same for, you know, a rock show or, you know, really any genre. You can, you know, go all out, but sometimes it just doesn't fit. But for EDM, it almost always works.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really going to town with the fog and the lights and the lasers and the visuals, like I'd say it adds to EDM shows for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's kind of what we did. You know, I went in, shout out Henry Landgraf, DJ Henny.
The man himself.
Yeah. Y'all hit that at the perfect time. That was awesome.
He was really instrumental in helping me plan for that rave because he, you know, he's been doing this for a while now and he's experienced. And so he kind of helped me formulate, kind of the vibe, like how should I present this to Athens and the Athens EDM scene and market, right?
Mm-hmm.
He really helped me, like, one, connect to other DJs that were also just great, but you know, he played a part in like the kind of production we did, what he believed we should emphasize in terms of effects. And you know, that part all went well, right? We kind of blew the budget a little bit on production. Really glad we did in retrospect, because that really created that rave environment.
Mm-hmm.
If those subs aren't shaking the ground, then it feels like less than it should be.
Yeah,
in my opinion. But you know, we get to the day of the show, right? And Xander had another job he had to deal with last minute, and so. You know, I'm running operations pretty much alone because some of our other team members also were doing different shows, right? So, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be an experience. So as soon as I know that Xander's not gonna be able to show up for this one, the security team is having serious trouble like connecting to our card readers and ticketing service.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, uh-oh. And then the minute I get called over to the gate at Paloma, the entire Jumbotron glitches out.
Ugh.
This is 30 minutes before start.
God. Nightmare.
And I'm like, oh my God. And I look over and my, the sound engineer, you know, is calling me on the walkie talkie and sounding panicked. And I'm like, and I get over there and there's like some serious electrical issues in the back of the screen. And I'm like, this could be a problem. Cause like we're relying on visuals heavily.
Yeah.
Because the budget would have been very high if we brought in more lasers and lights than we did.
And
it's
EDM.
Yeah.
It's EDM. You gotta have the visuals. Yeah, yeah. Gotta have the visuals. And so we were all, you know, I was definitely tripping out a little bit, but, you know, shout out to, Victoria Mitchell. She, you know, worked her magic, got the screen going for the most part. It glitched every now and then, but it was working enough. Put a little extra fog out, too, to hide the errors.
You can never have enough fog.
Yeah, nobody's going to complain because there's too much.
Yeah.
Until they can't breathe.
Yeah, and then they're like, all right, let's bring it down a little bit.
We'll keep it all right with the open air.
And so the problem was that, like, that delayed the start time by about 40 minutes.
Ooh.
Really tough. When you're already at a delayed start time, like, the people that showed up, you know, at doors are like, okay, like, dude, it's been, like, an hour.
Yeah.
Like, what are you guys doing? And I'm just trying to, like, walk around and, like, tell people, like, we're just dealing with a technical difficulty and all this. Security team's still, like, not quite you know, not quite connected to the services yet. And, like, you know, merch tent's not even set up yet. And I'm like, oh, my God. But finally, we get it going. We start the set, first set. It's going well. Sound is really good, really good. I'm like, great, this is going to save us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ended up having a little over 250 ticket sales on that one, which was, you know, less than I was hoping for, but still some people showed up. And and the people that showed up had a great time and told me as much. And I was like, great. I mean, as long as people enjoy, you know, what we're doing, like, again, that's what I'm after. You know, if they're having a good time and they're raving, like, it's awesome, great.
Yeah,
you know, mission accomplished. I mean, you know, even if we don't even break even, like, again, all these events are calculated risks. You have to be okay with taking a loss here and there. I learned a lot from that show, and I will, like, such a learning experience, just put it that way.
Just to go back to your question, there's like one specific thing that, like, definitely, you know, we've taken from the first Class City Jam and the rave and kind of continued moving forward with is just sponsors and the importance of sponsors. And like, I really have enjoyed like kind of meshing both the sides of the business in that way, because it's like we can provide material for the sponsors and like, you know, have it be like there's a lot more to the agreement than just, you know, here's some money, like throw your event, put our name on the banner. You know, it's like we can actually work with them. Like they can come, you know, set up a stand, like
create mutual value,
in a true way. Cause it's a lot, you know, small, like local businesses and like things like that, or, you know, drink companies and things like that. So, you know, it's fun to like team up with them rather than, you know, kind of just have some monetary, like, you know, agreement.
Making it more than just about exchanging money.
Right. Exactly.
Make it a true exchange of value, and whether that's exposure or, you know, demonstrating the product in some way at the event.
Like getting weird with it, you know, like trying stuff out.
Creative.
And that people don't see, because like everyone hates like products and stuff being pushed on them, like at the end of the day, like very deep down in there. Like, so, you know, how can we have it not be like that? You know, how can we just have it so that people are interested in this aspect of, you know, this cool business in Athens? Like, how can we demonstrate that? And how can, you know, you demonstrate, how can we, you know, be mutually beneficial in that way, like you're saying? So that's a big one, just teaming up with cool people for the events, for sponsors. So
awesome. And that's really just a reoccurring theme, is meet great people that are driven and are doing cool things, and good things will come out of it, guaranteed.
Dude, that sounds like a great segue into the last five. But before we do it, can you tell me again the date that Classic City Jam number 2 will be happening? It's August
26th.
26th.
This one's going to be more of a daytime show. Okay. So
daytime
be prepared.
Show alert.
It's going to be 11:30 doors and noon start time.
Nice. So pace yourselves.
It's going to go till 7:30.
Bring your sunglasses.
Yep.
Nice.
Hopefully it's going to be a nice, hot bluebird day and not rain.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Knock on wood.
Again, it's one of those variables that you can't control, so I try not to think about it. Yeah. But I try to control every other variable so that at least the remaining question marks are things that are literally out of my control.
Gotcha.
And I know that everything else is as good as I can possibly do. Because that's, I find comfort in that much, at least. Because whenever you throw an event of any kind, there's room for error in so many different ways. So many variables that could just go completely wrong. And so if you can lock down the ones that you really can lock down, you're at least halfway there.
Yeah.
And then you got to hope it doesn't
rain.
There's
only so much you can do. There's only so much you can prepare.
Exactly.
Totally.
So August 26th, everybody go get your tickets for Classic City Jam.
Tickets and announcement coming soon.
Drop the lineup and announce that. I'm very excited about this year. Really.
Do you want to announce the lineup now or do you want to wait?
I think we got to keep that one silent. But let's just say we have 7 of Athens' finest, and we're very excited.
Sweet. You can tell me off air. I won't tell anybody.
Will do.
Sweet. Well, let's take it over to the last five here. I'm just going to ask you 5 quick questions from this bowl. And by I mean the universe will ask it to you. You get to pick. Some of these are definitely more centered for, you know, musicians. So if you get one that feels more like that, there are others that still work.
Cool.
So let's see what number one is.
Okay, song you wish you wrote.
Interesting.
Freebird.
Freebird, why not? Fucking classic.
Yeah, let's deal with that.
Everybody screams your song. Yeah, somebody else's.
It's my
show.
Song, man. That's cool.
Pick up the, like, you just get harassed at the shows because of that song. It's just like,
You can always point to that one guy, annoying guy in the crowd, and be like, "Hey, man, that's my song."
That's my song, actually. Yeah, true.
Oh, you like Freebird?
I wrote it.
I did write that.
Let's check question number 2.
Move on to some.
Let's see what we got here. Dream artist, producer to work with.
Yeah, who would you guys love to work with?
Whoa. Okay, so I have a few of these. From a like visual standpoint and like just a creator that I'd love to just like bounce ideas around with, Donald Glover. You know, and Child.
Just rip the paper.
Whoops.
Buddy.
Vandalism on the show.
Sorry.
It's all good.
Just between like just between his music, his stand-up, Atlanta, like other things he's producing.
Atlanta's so sick.
It's just so, like, everything he does is just, like, so, has, it's just finger on the pulse, and he's just such a, like, visionary in that kind of regard where, like, he's just trying stuff out and it just seems to work. So, him, and Christopher Nolan.
Whoa. Yeah. Oppenheimer, let's go.
Can't wait. Excited. Going to see it in 70 millimeter.
Dude.
Yeah. 25 of them in the world. There's one at Mall of Georgia.
Oh, whoa. Should
come pull up.
That's sick. I have tickets to go see one in AMC. It's like Dolby Sound.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So that's going to be cool, but not as sick as 70 millimeter. Damn. Now I'm jealous.
Yeah. I'm just a rat for Christopher Nolan, dude. I'll watch his movies all day long. Yeah. So good.
One of the best.
Doesn't miss.
What about you, Garrett?
I guess on my end, even just an hour with Rick Rubin, I think, would be really impactful.
Invaluable.
Totally invaluable. I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and it was like 20 minutes long. There was so much value in pretty much everything he said. I was like, oh my God.
Do you have his book?
I'm reading his book right now.
Same.
It's unbelievable.
It's awesome.
He's got a way of writing things that's very like clear and like...
So simple.
So simple, yet so like kind of like profound, like truly profound.
Mm-hmm. I love that the one time he writes a book has nothing to do with him. Really?
Exactly.
It's like not a biography by any means.
It's like a way of thinking. It's like his way of thinking about creativity and like just how to create things. And, you know, it's so cool.
Yeah. It's very inspiring. And it also like helps me feel better when, if you're not like, I don't know, just like really trusting your intuition has been a big thing I took out of that book.
100%.
Doing something that feels right to you.
Yeah.
Has always been something that, you know, I never really fully understood and how to implement that in my life. And it's like, you can't necessarily please everybody, but if you do something that you think will provide value to you and hopefully to others, then maybe that's something to chase, you know? Maybe sometimes you shouldn't think about the demographic you're writing a song for, and maybe write something that's really deeply impactful for you. And odds are it might resonate with a couple people or a couple million people.
Mm-hmm.
It's always hard to say, but you know, do it for something bigger than yourself.
Absolutely.
And for yourself. So a little counterintuitive.
Well, what about question number 3?
Do it for yourself so it can be for other people.
Boom, there it is.
Because that's when you get the connection. You
know? Yes.
Exactly. You and people can tell it's you.
Exactly.
Best album covers.
Oh my. Man on the Moon.
We got one right here.
One of the most famous of all time, and one of my personal favorites. Of course, the Abbey Road.
Can't beat it.
Classic.
And then on the other side of that is Kid Cudi's Man on the Moon.
Yeah. I love that. I love that cover. Mainly, I just love that album. I think that cover is just more sentimental at that point. It's like when I see it, I'm like, I know every song.
It brings you back
to heart. Like, you know, it's
right.
So yeah, it feels like there's just been a lot of times where I, you know, go to that album just to like, you know, relax or like
totally,
you know, feel a feeling, whatever it is, positive, bad, you know, sad.
It's a comfort album.
Comfort album, totally. So I think, you know, I see that and I feel comfortable. Like I have that big poster of that on my wall. Like,
yeah,
so that's always been one I love.
Nice. All right. Question number 4.
And Baby Keem's.
Which one?
Die for My Bitch.
Is that the black and white one?
Yeah.
Dude, that one's so sick.
It's one where he's just got his ass beat.
Yeah. 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 That cover is hilarious. I love the other one, the one that Melodic Blue.
Yeah, Melodic
Dude,
Blue.
So
that,
sick.
I love that little dock thing he's sitting
on,
the colors.
Yeah, the rainbow dock. Yeah. Awesome.
Okay, perfect album front to back.
Well, you know,
yeah, well,
Man on the Moon.
Yeah, double answer right there.
And think about this.
If you can think of another one, that's totally cool too.
Yeah, I'm going to think about that.
But that is a classic. I mean, to be honest though, I don't know more than 2 or 3 songs, you know, the two or three hits.
Yeah.
But
I'm actually kind of a big rap guy. I guess that's coming out now at this
point.
We don't do that much stuff in rap, but I'd love to. But I do love rap. So I'll throw in another one right now. And this actually, I might catch some shit for this, but for not saying other Kendrick albums, but
ooh.
Kendrick's recent album, I don't remember what it was called.
Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers.
Yes, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. Like, I just listened to that in the car like over and over and over again. Like I hadn't done that with a new album in so long. Like it was like weird. Like I don't usually do that where I just like let it roll. Like,
yeah.
And not really skip around and like I don't know. That was a surprising one for me, honestly. So
it was like just the year anniversary, like a few weeks ago, I think, when that came out.
Yeah.
I remember same thing when it came out. I must have listened to it so much because by the end of the year, you get the Spotify Wrapped. It was like, your number one artist is Kendrick Lamar. And I was like, what?
Exactly.
Because I think it was just for a month period. That was all I listened to was that album.
Yep.
Which is wild because it's a fucking dark.
Right.
Like, right. Yeah. Very like dark going to the grocery subject store matter. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like, Auntie Diaries.
And right. You're like, oh my okay, God.
Dude, like, chill. Yeah. Relax.
Totally.
I guess for me, kind of a different vibe is there's this one Cage the Elephant album. Mm. Also blanking on the name of it.
True music fans.
Yeah, true.
Is it Melophobia, the one with the like the zebra print? Not print, but like the black and white
pink thing.
Face in the middle.
Yes. That's the one.
Yeah.
That album is unbelievable.
Yeah, what is that? Is it trying to be a face?
No idea, dude. It's like a weird wax figurine of like multiple. Yeah.
Love that album.
Yeah, that is like a perfect album front to back, dude. That is underrated, I think.
I love Cage the Elephant. They're bucket list live band. I want
to
see.
I got to see them open for Muse.
Oh, so
oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
No. Yeah, that had to be a while ago. I was like a senior in high school. Yeah. And I went to go. I don't listen to Muse a whole lot anymore, but seeing Cage open for them was crazy.
Yeah,
I love.
How were they live? What was their vibe?
Sick. They were awesome.
Really?
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah. I'm sure the energy was ridiculous.
It was. It was a bigger arena kind of thing, so it was kind of odd to see them in like such a big space. It would be really cool to see them in like something a little bit more intimate. Of an intimate place. Yeah. That's but I mean, they brought it. They crushed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's a cool album cover too. Kind of. It is. The last sick. Question.
Yeah,
too.
You're yeah. right. Yeah. Yeah. All right, last question here.
Hell yeah, let's make it a good one.
Unexpected musical influence.
So yeah, usually, you know, as an influence with artists, it's a little different, yeah. But like, yeah, who would people be kind of surprised that you really like?
I guess something that really sparked my love for music in general, and it's what led me to this path. it's kind of random, but Lenny Kravitz, Fly Away. So random.
I'm sorry, that's hilarious. I
know,
didn't expect
it's so
that.
Random. But
also, my first thought was the video of him doing a split and his balls fall out. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Dude, that's the funniest thing in the world.
That video's so good.
But my dad used to love him and used to play it on the car ride to school. And I'm in, you know, the fourth grade and he's blasting on the way to school. And I'm like, this is sick.
Yeah, like, yeah. Back there eating like Eggo waffles.
Right,
and, like,
right, you know, right.
Like, dripping syrup on his seats and just like, if I want to fly away.
Yeah. So, that's
but,
awesome.
You know, that really kind of interests me in music and rock in general. And I was like, it's making me feel things.
Yeah.
And then kind of from a visual standpoint, more honestly than the music itself, and this is now me hammering home the rap point, but A$AP Rocky's visuals, in my opinion, changed my whole perception on like what you can do and like, what a visual for music can be and like why it should be the way that it is. Like his videos are like actual works of art, like, and I've seen all of them so many times, but like I just that like opened my whole thing into like where media was going, like even further into music videos, like, you know, obviously like started all with like MTV and all that, but it's like it's gotten to the point now where it's like these doing these crazy edits and like these just these like. And, you know, his whole team, like, the it's just unbelievable. Like, the AWG collection or whatever, AWGE, they just make incredible stuff. It's, like, the huge team of, like, people in photography and videography, and they just aggregate all the data. And then a lot of it's Dexter Navy who edits it all. And, like, that guy is a master at his craft. Like, and just the way he can put all these random things in but have it all come out, like, in some kind of cohesive manner where each one seems like it's done for A$AP Rocky and like wouldn't really be for anyone else. Mm-hmm. That just totally changed my whole perception on like music videos and like just what you can do and like put out on YouTube. And just like, it's just, I just love those videos.
Yeah, dude. I it's literally so late, but last year I remember I watched the LSD music video for the first time ever.
Oh,
and I mean, that song's probably like 10 years old, but like, I was like, what? They made this 10 years ago?
Everything
like,
down
this
to song,
this video is wild.
Everything down to like the little neon glow in that.
Yeah.
It's just like
yeah.
impeccable. Like it's like somebody spent time on every little aspect of that. It's so cool.
Yeah. So A$AP Rocky. Yeah, there you go. I kind of feel the same way about Brockhampton, the way
yes.
Just like the way they burst onto the scene and had such an effect on the way, and you know, they're all kind of like sort of, I don't want to say copying, but you know, they're all taking stuff from like Odd Future or like Wu-Tang Clan, but like the marketability that they brought, I thought was insane. I mean, same with Odd Future.
I saw them at Firefly and they came out on this gold jet. They like, so I was talking to one of my buddies who's actually doing photography for White Panda at Firefly. So he had like a backstage pass, and he was talking to one of the, not any of the guys who rap, but the guys who are like the graphic designers, you know, all that big team.
Yeah.
And he was saying they lost money on the show because they wanted to get the gold jet put there, and they just wanted to like come out and go crazy. And like, they, you know, they weren't worried about, you know, making a bunch of money. Like, and so apparently they were like down because it just took so much, like they had to get like a crane or some shit to put it on the stage. Yeah. And then they come out in like these space suits, like the whole squad, like, and I was just like, this is something, like people are just like going crazy. Like some of the craziest mosh pits I've ever been a part of. Like,
yeah.
It's cool. It's
that's cool, so cool. You got to see them before they disbanded.
See, that's one of the things I respect is like, that was clearly a choice, not for financial gain or anything else, but to bring joy and create such an incredible experience for the people. I love that.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, that's what you guys are doing.
That's what
here.
We're trying to do.
That's the Clear whole, Mountain Entertainment.
That's the whole thing, man. That's the whole thing. Just making something memorable happen.
And that will be happening on August 26th.
Shameless plug.
Yeah. I plug you guys so you don't have to.
My man.
Xander and Garrett, Kiermonte. I said it right.
Yes, sir.
Yes, that's character development by the end of the podcast. Perfect. I got it. Thank you guys for coming on the podcast. Everybody needs to hit up Clear Mountain Entertainment. You know, get a consultation. Work with these boys. Get yourself something. Thank you guys for coming on the pod, man. It's been awesome. I'm glad we finally got to make it happen.
You're the man. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, brother.
Dude,
it's been
awesome.
Of course. Yeah.
Thank you guys again. I'll talk to y'all soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you again for tuning into the newest episode of On That Note with Parker Werling. Remember, not only can you listen to the episodes on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but you can also watch the episodes on my YouTube channel, which is linked in the description below. And on that note, I'll see you guys next time.